Well, brothers and sisters, we're ready to begin our second class. Our speaker for our second class is Brother Josh Hodge. And the theme for Brother Hodge's classes this week is Women of Faith, the Beauty of Roles. And today's class is entitled Abigail, the Woman of Good Understanding. Brother Josh.
Brothers and sisters, good morning. Today is a special day. Every day is a special day, but today is particularly special because 10 years ago today, I met my woman of good understanding. Thank you for that. So that was very nice. All right. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Perhaps one of the most anti-human nature verses that exist. You know what I'm talking about? When we experience evil, human nature wells up within us to do evil back. It's one of the most rudimentary and basic laws of nature, isn't it? You see it in children. They started it. They hit me, so I hit them back. They took my toy, therefore I took it back. That's why I responded the way I did. But it's not limited to children, is it? We see it just as much in adults. They took what rightly belonged to me. They made this poor decision that impacted my family. He did this, she did that. Those people accuse me of this, therefore I will act. You know what makes something even harder to live by, particularly this verse, is when an opportunity comes or when evil is presented in the exact same way a second time. It's much harder to keep resisting that evil because the second time we feel even more justified. You think about David, 1 Samuel chapter 26. David was presented with the opportunity to kill Saul. For the second time in a short space. 1 Samuel chapter 24, he was presented with the opportunity to kill Saul. 1 Samuel chapter 26, he was presented with the opportunity to kill Saul to enact revenge on the king of Israel. David was roaming the wilderness, and we have to think about how hard that would be. He's fleeing for his life, no comforts of home. Food wasn't easy to come by. Water wasn't easy to come by. He's leading 600 men that weren't exactly comforting to be with. They were discontented. They were in debt, it says. They were agitated. This was a rough bunch. He was in the wilderness with them, fleeing for his life. And you could just imagine David could easily feel justified about killing Saul, 1 Samuel 26. Well, okay, I didn't kill him the first time when I had opportunity, but maybe God's telling me to do it this time. He's presented him to me again. And one of my top men is saying, it's a good idea. And not only that, one of his top men, Abishai, says, I'm happy to do it for you, David. And you can imagine David saying, okay, well, the blood won't even be on my hands. After all, Samuel told me I'm going to be the next king. This makes sense. This is when it's going to happen. And just a little while ago, the son of Saul, Jonathan, told me, I will be king. Saul's not going to get me. And Jonathan's going to be next to me. I haven't done anything wrong. This is my opportunity. You know what makes things even harder than that, though, brothers and sisters? Have you ever been hungry? Does your patience increase? It doesn't, does it? In fact, it's quite amazing how our patience bar just whoop, just disappears when we're really hungry. What about when we are tired? We went through the classroom with the teens and they told me all the hours or lack of hours that they slept. We're a little grouchier, a little more agitated, a little more quick to react, aren't we? What about when we're emotionally strained? What about when we're in a trial? When we're worn down, we lose our patience more. And David's patience would have been very low in 1 Samuel chapter 25. So turn there with me in 1 Samuel 25. And I just want to remind you, 1 Samuel 25 is situated between, well, chapter 24 and 26, obviously, but the stories where David is presented to kill Saul. And in 1 Samuel 25, it says that Samuel dies, that Israel is mourning the loss. And David loved Samuel. Samuel was the spiritual leader. David would have looked up to him. David actually went to him at times for advice. And now he's gone. He would have been on edge. We know he was on edge, brothers and sisters. He is about to murder Nabal and everything that belonged to him. How is David going to hold on to the principles of God a second time, and really a third time in the span of three chapters? And the answer is found in 1 Samuel chapter 25. Here's our story. Verse 2, there was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel, and the man was very great. He was great in every natural way, great in riches, great in status, great in business, but you know what he wasn't? He wasn't great in the truth. Brothers and sisters, verse 3 says, the name of the man was Nabal. The word Nabal means fool. It's the same word in Proverbs chapter 30, verse 21 and 22. It says, for three things the earth is disquieted. The earth can't handle these things. And for four, it can't bear them. A servant when he reigneth, and a fool, that's the word Nabal. Proverbs 30, verse 22, a fool when he's filled with meat, when he's satisfied, somebody who thinks he's the best, he's untouchable, nothing can please him or interest him, oh, except one person, himself. That's Nabal. And it says, at the end of verse 3, that he was churlish. It means cruel. Severe, hard-hearted is the same word in Exodus 6, verse 9, when Moses speaks to the children of Israel, and they hearken not to him for anguish of spirit and cruel bondage. He's likened to the taskmasters of Egypt. And it says, verse 3, that he was evil in his doings. You couldn't get a more wicked person than Nabal. And it's a contrast to Abigail. You see, he was married to Abigail, it says, verse 3. And Abigail means source of joy, or my father is joy. And we see those two root words, the two root words that make up the name Abigail, in Proverbs 23, verse 24. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Why will the father greatly rejoice? Because their children choose righteousness. Because their child chooses wisdom. Because their child chooses good understanding. And that's what Abigail was. A woman of good understanding, we'll come to see. She brings joy. You know, back in 1 Samuel 25, it says she was a woman of good understanding and of beautiful countenance. This was a woman that was beautiful internally, and she was beautiful externally. It says she was of good understanding, and this is the critical word that we're going to be working through as we go along in the story. Good understanding. It's the word sakal. The theological word book of the Old Testament says, Sakal relates to an intelligent knowledge of the reason. There's a process of thinking through a complex arrangement of thoughts, resulting in a wise dealing and use of good practical common sense. So what does that mean? This is a type of wisdom that somebody had, and they could see the setting, they could see the context, they could see the characters involved, and they knew when to speak. They knew how to speak. They knew what things to say and how to say them. They could read the situation well, and they could implement God's principles. It says in Proverbs 3, where this word is found, my son, don't forget my law or my commandments. Let mercy and truth stay with thee, bind them on thy neck, write them on the table of thine heart, so that you find sakal understanding. That's the same word, good understanding, in the sight where of God and man. So where does this come from? It comes from the word of God. And it comes from understanding mercy and truth. You know, when we use this good understanding in our lives, it's a wellspring of life unto him that hath it. Proverbs 16, verse 22. Understanding, same word, is a wellspring of life unto him that hath it. That's Abigail. She gave life. She revived the soul of David. But the verse goes on to say, but the instruction of fools is folly. That's Nabal. You've got Abigail and Nabal in that verse. Abigail is a life-giving spirit, and Nabal's spirit kills, it crushes. Proverbs 23, verse 9 says, speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom, same word, sakal, of thy words. No wonder you could have such a foolish husband and such a wise woman. You know, I want to give you one more verse where this word is found. 1 Samuel 18, verse 14. It's actually found there three times, the verb form of the word sakal. And it says, David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and Yahweh was with him. David was a man of good understanding. It says it three times about him in 1 Samuel 18. But you know, even righteous people have low moments. And while David had sakal wisdom often, sometimes in our low moments we lose it. And we need somebody brought into our lives by God to help remind us to use that wisdom. Well, those are the characters, Abigail, Nabal, David. So what's the story? Well, they're in the wilderness, and David hears Nabal is shearing his sheep. And he sends 10 young men to Carmel and tells them to greet Nabal in his name. And we read in verse 6, David says, say this in my name, peace be to thee, peace be to thy house, peace be unto everything that you have, Nabal. And you can just see David is putting every effort into his communication here to be gentle, to be delicate, to be effective. But he didn't just put effort into his communication. He did it with his actions as well. And he says, verse 7, I've heard that thou hast shears. Now thy shepherds, which were with us, we hurt them not. Neither was there aught missing unto them all the while we were in Carmel. And at first glance, it seems like, okay. Good job, David. You didn't steal. That's what it kind of sounds like, doesn't it? We didn't hurt the shepherds. I think David's being modest in his words here. If you look at verse 21, David says, in vain have I kept all that this fellow hath in the wilderness. That word kept means to protect, to guard. But not only that, the servants of Abigail, when they come to Abigail, they report what David had done. In verse 15, the men were good to us. They didn't hurt us, neither missed we anything, as long as we were conversant with them and we were in the fields. They were a wall unto us night and day while we were keeping the sheep. This was more than just David's absence of hurting them. He very much helped them. David sought for kindness in return. He says, Nabal, do you have any sustenance to spare? Whatever's on hand, don't go out of your way But if you have something, and certainly they did, we find out. Now, the servants convey this to Nabal. And it says in verse 9 that afterwards they said these things and ceased. And in the words of Jason, that's weird. Why does it need to tell us that they spoke those things and, you know, periods tell us that the conversation's over, but it says, and ceased. They remained quiet. It's like there was this long, awkward pause as Nabal is standing there in disbelief. How dare they approach me? So he eyes them over with disdain. And when he speaks, they're not going to speak again. They ceased. And we'll see why in a second. But if you were David, and you're doing everything right, and you've communicated in the right spirit to elicit a certain response, you've acted in the right manner, you're expecting a certain type of response. David was looking for kindness, and he did everything to deserve that kindness, we could say. What does he get? Who does he think he is? This David, nobody's son of Jesse. He's like all the other runaway slaves that don't serve their masters. In fact, the servants, when reporting about his behavior, they say in verse 14 at the very end that Nabal railed on them. Theological word book says this means to scream or to shriek. No wonder they ceased from speaking. And he says, it's worth highlighting the pronouns in verse 11, shall I take my bread and my water and my flesh that I've killed for my shears and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? This was all about him. And brothers and sisters, when we approach a difficult situation and we do everything that we can to elicit a certain response, what do we expect? We expect a certain response. They didn't get it. And so what would you do at that point? Well, David's response was to wipe them off from the face of the earth. And he said, men, gird your swords. We're going to annihilate them. David was livid. He was in a rage. He was furious. And in verse 21, David says, in vain have I done this. All that pertained unto him, he hath requited me evil for good. And there's the sentiments of Romans chapter 12, isn't there? He's doing evil for good. And now I'm going to show him evil back. I'm going to render evil for evil. David says, verse 22, so and more also do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave all that pertain to him by morning light, any man-child. David says, if I don't get the job done, I hope God will. Some commentaries understand the Hebrew there to be, if I don't get the job done, I'm happy if God kills me. David was irate. And in Proverbs 25, verse 28, he that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down and without walls. Proverbs 25, 28. David's reputation was on the line. You can't control your spirit. You endanger a whole city because you can't think rationally and you make decisions that compromise you and your city. And the walls of David's mind here are broken. He's tired. He's exhausted. He's hungry, and his decision making had come to ruin. He was overcome by Nabal's evil, and in his mind, he would overcome evil with evil. And this is where we insert this incredibly inspiring woman, Abigail. And the spirit of Abigail, brothers and sisters, I think might bring us to our knees. The news of what David was going to do to Nabal had reached her. And we read in verse 16, or verse 17, "Now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil," there it is, David was going to render evil for evil, "is determined against our master and against all his household. He's such a son of Belial that a man cannot even speak to him." Now, brothers and sisters, I want you to grab your handouts at this point. There's a few more blanks in this class than the other ones. I can't remember the page number, but if you go to the Abigail section, you'll notice there's a chart. Page 38. Thank you for that. So if you go to page 38, you'll see a chart, and in the middle of the chart, well, it's empty. And what we're going to go through is all of these principles where Sakal wisdom is at work in the life of Abigail. We're going to put them up on the screen. And to the left, the column on the left, are all the verses that are supporting what Abigail did in that context. And the verses on the right are supporting principles in scripture that support these ideas. Now in verse 17 or verse 18, "Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves, 2 bottles of wine, 5 sheep ready dressed, 5 measures of parched corn, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs, and laid them on donkeys." She had that all just ready to go. Imagine, brothers and sisters, you're hungry and you go to your kitchen cupboards and you open them and it's a walk-in pantry because it's big, and you walk in and you're in Costco. Did you see how much she had just on hand? It's incredible. And in verse 18, not only does she have it, she makes haste. She did it quickly. And that's our first word that we want to write in to our booklets. Sometimes Sakal wisdom requires us to act in haste. Sometimes in the truth, there are situations that call us to drop whatever we're doing and act right away. And that's what Abigail did. In verse 23, when she sees David, she hasted. And David acknowledges the speed and that it was important in verse 34, "Except you had hasted," he says. Sometimes in the truth, we have to act in haste. Well, we read in verse 20 that she rides on her donkey and she comes down by the covert of the hill, and behold, David and his men came down against her and she met them. You just think about that. Sometimes we focus on all the words of Abigail, as we should. But here's this woman riding on a donkey with food, coming to meet an army that's extremely angry and volatile, coming to kill her family. This took bravery. It took great faith to approach a future king and his army while they are on their way for blood. Sometimes Sakal wisdom, brothers and sisters, requires us to be brave, to act in faith. And in verse 23, "When Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighted off the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground and fell at his feet and said, 'Upon me, my Lord.'" She calls him Lord. And in your handouts, she doesn't just call him Lord once. She calls him Lord 14 times in this context. She bows herself before David. You remember David's first interaction? He called David a runaway slave. Here you've got Abigail, who's bowing herself before David and calling him Lord. Sometimes we have to show great humility and respect in the truth. That is what Sakal wisdom would require of us. She bows herself before David and she says, verse 24, "Upon me let this iniquity be, and let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience and hear the words of thine handmaid. Give me a chance, even if it's a small chance. Let the sin be upon me." What a remarkable thing. This is a very difficult thing to do, to take the blame when you had nothing to do with it. Sometimes Sakal wisdom, brothers and sisters, requires us to bear the blame, to bear the burden. You think of Galatians 6 verse 2, bear one another's burdens and fulfill the law of Christ. She says, let this iniquity be on me. Have you ever had that situation, brothers and sisters? You know that if you can take the blame for something, that a situation's going to go a lot better. And you think about that in your mind, and you go to say something, you go to do something, and then your brain clicks in and says, oh, but you're going to look bad. And then there's this great struggle in our mind. It's a very difficult thing to do. And think about the wisdom in this, though. Who was David mad at? He wasn't really mad at Abigail. He was mad at Nabal. And what she did was she took the spotlight off of Nabal and says, David, you want to be mad? Be mad at me. This person that's now fallen over on the ground with humility. And she says in verse 25, let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord whom thou didst send. She realizes that Nabal's at fault here. And she doesn't ignore or cover the truth of the situation. She doesn't demonstrate bias because she's defending her husband. She says exactly what he is, a fool. How easy is it for us to defend our husbands and wives, our children? Sometimes we think that our children are right, and so often, brothers and sisters, they're not. How easy it is to defend our parents in a situation. Or a loved one that's really close to us. And scripture tells us to care and to protect our families, absolutely. And there are appropriate times to not repeat a matter, as it says in Proverbs, to avoid gossip and to avoid other types of trouble. But we have to hold up everything to the light of the truth, whether it's with our own family or not. And so sometimes Sakal wisdom requires us to be people of integrity, to demonstrate honesty even when it's hard. And in verse 26, it says, therefore, my Lord, as Yahweh liveth and as thy soul liveth, seeing Yahweh hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood, from avenging thyself with thine own hands, now let thine enemies and they that seek evil, there's that theme again, to my Lord be as Nabal. She saw that Yahweh was directing her. Did you notice that? She said, Yahweh hath withholden thee. Well, wait a second. God hasn't stopped David. Where's God in this? Abigail's the one that's fallen down before David. But you see, Abigail was looking for God in her life. And that's called providence. To see God working in your life. And not just to see God working in your life, to talk about it, brothers and sisters, because we have to think spiritually and talk spiritually. We have to see things through a spiritual lens. God has restrained you, David. God hadn't restrained him directly. God restrained him through her. And she was realizing that. And yet she didn't actually know that David was going to stop. She didn't know what he was thinking at this point. He could have brushed her aside, moved on, and finished what he began. But she was starting to frame him in a positive light. Now we read in verse 27, now this blessing which thine handmaid hath brought unto my Lord, let it even be given unto the young men that follow my Lord. This lesson is quite simple. Sakal wisdom requires us to be people that are generous, to give above and beyond. And that's exactly what she did, and she did it in haste. And we read in verse 28, I pray thee forgive the trespass of thy handmaid. There it is again, that great humility. Forgive the trespass of thy handmaid, for Yahweh will make my Lord a sure house. Because my Lord fighteth the battles of Yahweh. Evil, there's the theme again, hath not been found thee in all thy days, David. Don't render evil for evil. That's not who you are. And she elevates Yahweh above everything else, declares that he's in control. We're in the hands of God. He's the almighty creator. We can't accomplish anything of significance without God. David, you fight God's battles. So David, what battle are you fighting right now? Are you off to fight the Lord's battles? Because I know you're a person that fights God's battles. That's who you are. And she aligns David with God's purpose. She doesn't justify his present actions, but she puts him in a spiritual light. She resets him, refreshes his focus in the moment. In verse 30, she reminds him that God has done him so much good. Verse 30 says, it shall come to pass when Yahweh have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee. Yahweh promised you good, and it will happen, David. He's appointed thee ruler over Israel. And she speaks as if God's words are absolutely going to happen, because when God says something, they will happen. And so Sakal wisdom is putting God first, and it's aligning others with God's will. It's assuming the best in others. It's assuming that our brothers and sisters that are sitting beside us are part of God's plans. So how are we working through that in our minds? How are we working through that in our ecclesias? Now, back in verse 28, she says, Yahweh will certainly make my Lord a sure house. A sure house. It's the Hebrew words, Amen Beach. And the same words are found in 2 Samuel 7, verse 16. And that's when David was given the covenant. And it says, in thine house, Beath, and thy kingdom shall be established. Established, amen. And Abigail was preventing David from ending her house while getting him to think about his house and that his house would be established. She knew it would be, in a very natural sense, at minimum. Verse 30, God's appointed you ruler over Israel. David, focus on what God is building for you. God's going to give you a house, David, which is far superior than any satisfaction of revenge. Your throne and your kingdom will be established. Evil, she says, hath not been found thee all the days. Don't be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. And we read in verse 29, yet a man is risen to pursue thee, to seek thy soul. Who's the man pursuing David? It wasn't Nabal. Now she's bringing Saul into the mix. That word pursue can also be translated as persecute. It was Saul that was pursuing David, and that was persecuting him, that was dragging him through the mud, that was making his life miserable. She brings it up because she knows that what David's doing is hard. He's under a lot of pressure. His life is difficult. And she's showing care for the challenges in David's life. Brothers and sisters, Sakal wisdom tells us to empathize with the burdens of others. It's so easy to brush aside the trials of others, isn't it? Because the greatest trial is the one that we have, because it's our trial. And we're not in other people's trials. It's harder to see their difficulties. And it's very easy to see all the solutions and the steps that everybody else needs to take to overcome their trials. Brothers and sisters, Sakal wisdom tells us to appreciate and to know what others are going through, to empathize with the burdens of others. And she says in verse 29, Saul may be chasing you, but David, the soul of my Lord, your soul shall be bound in the bundle of life with Yahweh thy God. That word bundle means bag or sling. It's something that holds possessions. And Abigail's telling David, your life, David, is held in the arms of God. God holds and he cares for you like a newborn. Saul may be pursuing you, David, but you're not in the hands of him. You're in the hands of your Father in heaven. And this is what God can do to your enemies, David. It's what God can do. He will sling them out, it says, verse 29, as out of the middle of a sling. This word is a verb. This word occurs 7 total times. In Jeremiah 10, verse 18, it says, thus saith Yahweh, I will sling out the inhabitants of the land this once and will distress them, that they may find it so. And it's referring to the people of Judah who are idolatrous and disobedient, and God could sling them out. You know where this word also occurs? It occurs in 1 Samuel 17, verse 49. David put his hand in his bag, took a stone, and he slang it, it says, and smote the Philistine in his forehead. This is the story of Goliath, and Abigail is bringing his mind back to that victory. And that context tells us David understood his life was in the hands of God. And it brings David back to a heroic moment, but also a moment that David realized was a moment that God provided. David had said this back in 1 Samuel 17, Yahweh saves not with sword and spear. The battle is Yahweh's. He will give you into our hands. David, is this God's battle or is this a personal vendetta? And we read in verse 31, she says, I don't want this to be a grief unto thee, nor offensive heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless, or that my Lord hath avenged himself. But when Yahweh shall have dealt well with my Lord, when you are now king, which she had just reminded him of, then remember thine handmaid. Remember this moment, David. You don't want this weighing on your conscience or burdening your mind while you rule. Spilling blood without cause, personal revenge without God. God's going to deal well with you. When he does, please remember me. And so Sakal wisdom, brothers and sisters, protects other people from sin. Do you know what that's called? In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 8 and James 5 verse 19 and 20, when you save people from the error of their ways, you cover a multitude of sins. And in those contexts, brothers and sisters, it's called love. And that's part of Sakal wisdom. David was prevented from sinning. Look at verse 32. David said to Abigail, blessed be Yahweh God of Israel, which sent thee this day to me. And blessed be thy advice, and blessed be thou which kept me this day from coming to shed blood and from avenging myself with mine own hand. For in very deed as Yahweh God of Israel lives, which has kept me from hurting thee, except thou hast hasted and come to meet me. Surely there had not been left unto Nabal by the morning light any man-child. Oh, David was thankful. The last words that we heard from David were this: "Gird ye on every man his sword." And now these are his words. And Abigail had intervened and turned his mind to the words of God. And David acknowledged all of these things in these verses. She was a woman who used wisdom. David said, "Blessed be thy advice." You know, that word's found 13 times. 5 of them are actually translated taste. You know how a person can leave a bad taste in your mouth? Abigail was the opposite. She was a fountain of life. She changed the whole mind of David, his mood, his disposition, his aura. And in Proverbs 16:24, she says, "Pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones." Psalm 119:103, "How sweet are thy words." That's Abigail. "How sweet are thy words unto my taste." And look at what David says in verse 35. "So David received her hand, that which she had brought, and said unto her, Go up in peace to thine house. See, I have hearkened to the voice, to thy voice, and accepted thy person." Does that remind you of anything? It was wrong for Adam to listen to the voice of his wife in Genesis 3. It was wrong for Abraham to listen to the voice of his wife because it was poor leadership decisions in that moment. But it was right for David to listen to the voice of Abigail, the one who would become his wife. You see, it's not about whether we listen to wives or sisters or mothers. It's whether or not the words are sound and scriptural and filled with wisdom like Abigail, if they've been thought through. The man would be very prudent to hearken to the voice of his wife when it's true and holy and filled with Sichel wisdom. And in so doing, he can be a better leader. He can better lead his house. He can better lead the ecclesia. David recognizes verse 38, "It came to pass after 10 days that Yahweh smote Nabal and he died." And David says, "Blessed be Yahweh that had pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and hath kept back his servant from evil." David knew that he was in jeopardy from rendering evil with evil. And he acknowledges that God stopped him as well and put Abigail in his life. And when David finds out that Nabal dies, he sends for Abigail to be his wife. And it says in verse 40, that David sent to take her to wife, and she arose, verse 41, and bowed herself on her face to the earth, and said, "Behold, let thy handmaid be a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." You know, the first time she bowed before David, she did so as a servant. The second time she bowed, she did so as a future wife. The first time she bowed, she did it with the purpose of saving. The second time she bows, she does it with the purpose of serving. That's the spirit of the Lord Jesus, isn't it? He came to save people from their sins, Matthew 1:21. And he served others by washing their feet, John 13:5. Abigail was one person. One woman, one wife, one sister, one servant of God, living in Maon, in the wilderness to a husband not in the truth. What possibly could her impact be? Do you ever think about that, sisters? Maybe that's something that you wrestle with. Look at what Abigail did in this small window of time. She provided for an army of hundreds. She saved dozens of people from murdering. She saved dozens of people from being murdered. She changed the heart of a future king and stopped him from sinning. She redirected judgment into the hands of God. She glorified the Almighty Creator. She left a legacy that has been left for thousands of years and read by millions. And she taught by her example that evil must not be overcome by evil, but it must be overcome by good. And you know what? This wasn't true for just this moment. Because David would be tested again in the very next chapter. And Abishai says, David, here is your opportunity. And David does something differently in chapter 26 than he does in chapter 24. He uses different words. He had just learned a lesson and he says, can we do this and be guiltless? Yahweh will smite him one day. As Yahweh liveth, he's in control. Where do you think David got those principles from? David used the wisdom that he had learned and been reminded of in chapter 25 and applied it in chapter 26. And so here are the key points, the key lessons. The wise actions and words of a sister off the platform can impact a king, an army, a nation, for a moment, and for generations to come. And brothers, a brother should live with humility that it might be, that he might be influenced to not be overcome with evil, but to overcome evil with good. There will be so many opportunities where we have to be reminded of that. But we have to live that principle and teach that principle to be a spiritual leader. You know, in some ways, this story is incredible and profound. In other ways, it's simple. It was a small, humble act that required courage and faith. It was a woman that responded to her responsibility as servant of God. One small act with unscaled positive consequences that in some way have reverberated through history as we sit here thousands of years later, awestruck at her example. Abigail understood her role, and she stands as a towering example in the house of God, fulfilling that role. And the lessons that we learn about roles in her life, that, brothers and sisters, is the wisdom of Yahweh. And it's through wisdom that the house of God, which is the ecclesia of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth, is built, and by understanding that it is established.